The following message was recorded at the 2012 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the No Regrets Conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
Thank you to God for who you are, recognizing that if it was not for you, we would not be here, Father. So we thank you for your goodness, your grace, and your love and your kindness. Now we ask that you just be with us, all of us who are here right now. Hear, Lord, what you have to say through me. And I pray to God that what is said, it is for our good, but your glory. So we offer this prayer in Jesus' name, for all praise. Amen.
Amen.
So there are a number of health concerns that men have. And we're only going to touch on a few of them. Next slide. And as we go through the talk, you can refer to 3 John 2, which talks about what God wants for us. He wants us to prosper and be in good health as your soul prospers. So we are commanded to practice good health practices. And if nothing else, we should want to follow what the Word says in terms of how we take care of our bodies and what we do, all for the glory of God. So this is a list of health conditions. This is the same list that I had last year. We didn't get through many of them, and we probably won't get through them today. But before we move into this list, I want to begin with something that came up at the very end of the last session that it sparked a number of questions, but we didn't have time to address that. And without any names, but the young man mentioned that the fact that he was a kidney transplant patient, and he's on the list. He's got renal failure, but he was on the list to be transplanted to get a kidney transplant. But during the course of his evaluation, and this was a young man in his 40s, in the course of his evaluation, he was found to have prostate cancer. So a decision he had to make, to get treated for the prostate cancer or get the transplant, because he couldn't do both. In terms of, if you know about transplants, getting the kidney transplants, you are treated with what's called immunosuppressive drugs. So anybody with a cancer in place, if you get those drugs, then the cancer can get worse, basically. So that was his dilemma. So he went through the treatment of getting the prostate removed, and then now he is on the list to get his kidney transplant. So the thing he brought up was that now that he's had his prostate removed, his major problem right now is that his sexual dysfunction. He can't have an erection. That was his complaint. So, talking about prostate cancer, there's controversy now, and a lot recently, about the benefit of getting the PSA. You know what that is, prostate-specific antigen, which is a blood test, to determine whether or not you have prostate cancer. Well, the reason that the PSA can be elevated is not only for prostate cancer, but if you have prostatitis, which is an infection of the prostate gland, the PSA can be elevated. If you have what's called benign prostatic hypertrophy, called BPH, that too can cause elevation of the PSA. So the test that is used for screening for prostate cancer is the PSA. So, therefore, the question is, should it be used as a screening test? Because if you get an abnormal result, you got to do something about it. Sometimes what you do is to repeat the test and see if it's elevated, consistently, persisting, then that may suggest that you need a biopsy and then if you get the biopsy back and it's positive, then you have to make a decision about treatment of this prostate cancer. Now, prostate cancer comes in, you know, various stages at the time of diagnosis. It could be very early. And I should point out that in autopsy studies done years ago, in older men, it was not unusual to find prostate cancer. So it is not an uncommon cancer in men, probably a frequent one, but it can be around for a long time and therefore cause no symptoms. So with a diagnosis of prostate cancer, the question then becomes, should it be treated? Depending upon the stage of it, the answer is yes. So it is the earliest stage when it's most encapsulated that there is controversy as to whether it should be treated, and if so, how it should be treated. Understanding the side effects of the treatment. And one of the treatments, which has been longstanding, is prostatectomy, removal of the prostate gland. And during the course of that procedure, there's going to be damage to the seminal vesicles, and therefore the patient is going to have erectile dysfunction after the procedure. So if you are diagnosed with that and you go to the doctor, the urologist primarily, you need to talk about the treatment and some of the side effects of the treatment, because you need to be prepared, you know, to deal with the side effects, especially, you know, when you're married, because they are part of the decision making, should be a part of the decision making process. And there are, you know, other forms of treatment like radiation therapy or even cryotherapy, which is freezing the prostate gland, and there's side effects associated with you know, each one of them. So my point is that the two points: one, PSA screening, prostate cancer screening with the PSA, should it be done? If you and when you go to your doctor for an appointment for your annual physical examination, and especially 40 years of age and older, you should talk about what the prostate gland feels like, because you're going to have the digital rectal examination. They're going to feel the gland and see what it feels like. If there's a hard nodule, or if it's bigger in size than what it normally is, then the doctor needs to tell you that. Okay, and then you need to decide if you're going to have a biopsy done. So that digital rectal examination, the first decision is, should you have the PSA blood test done if something is found abnormal on the examination? That's a decision that you have to make in consultation with your doctor. And sometimes it's not an easy decision, but it depends on what the findings are that dictates whether or not you're going to have, say, the PSA done. Clearly, if it's elevated and that if the PSA is elevated and you have a hard nodule there, it ought to be biopsied. Because if it's cancer, then it could be in the early stages. And then when it comes to talking about treatment, as I said, you need to have a detailed conversation, you know, with your doctor about the options of treatment, considering the stage of the cancer. If it's a more advanced stage and surgery is not an option, it should not be an option, because surgery won't cure if it's at a more advanced stage. But as I said, one of the major complications, not complications, but side effects of the treatment for prostate cancer, especially from surgery, now is the erectile dysfunction. Okay? And again, you need to understand what that means, what can or cannot be done after that prostate gland, you know, surgery, because that's going to require a change in your lifestyle. Now, yes, sir.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Which part?
What you said, what it means, erectile dysfunction.
Well, it means that you cannot and will not have an erection.
No more.
No more. Now, when that happens, and even before it happens, if that's a decision that you make, in having the conversation with the urologist, who should be a specialist. Now, they work in concert now with other urology-type doctors who actually deal with erectile dysfunction after surgery and for other reasons. So there are other things that can be done, but you need to ask.
Yes.
And not only that, you need to prepare yourself for that by asking before you go through the operation. And again, if you're married, your partner should be, your wife should be part of that conversation in making a decision about the surgery if that's your decision. Again, you got to be on one accord when it comes to something like this. Yes?
You speak of ratio. What is the ratio? What are the numbers that you, what rank are you supposed to be within when it comes to your prostate examination when you get your blood for that?
Well, I don't have the numbers here in front of me, okay? But wherever labs that's your doctor's working with, they have a normal, there's an accepted normal range, so you got to know what that is. So it's not just a generic answer, okay? But it's important to know what that number is. And in some cases, if it's elevated at one time, maybe you should repeat it to be sure it's still elevated. Or if there's a change, how much of a change, you know, is there to decide if, in fact, this is something significant. Okay? Yes?
Two questions. My PSA was elevated to the point I had biopsy. 3 months later, after prayer of the church or whatever, it went down 41 points. What is your feeling on radiation treatment versus total removal?
Well, have you been diagnosed with prostate cancer by a biopsy?
Yes.
Okay. Because even though the PSA is elevated, it doesn't mean it's cancer. You've got to do a biopsy to confirm it.
You do 6 biopsies, one came back 12%.
One out of the six
came back 12%.
Positive. One of the six came back positive. And, no, in that case, you might have been dealing with a small tumor, a small cancer. And, you know, why things, you know, change, I can't tell you.
You need a good doctor, you're struggling.
Okay. So it is possible that with that high level, in addition to the cancer being present, there might have been some prostatitis, inflammation of the gland. Okay, because as I said, well, the gland itself is enlarged in size. So causes of elevated PSA is gland hypertrophy as well as prostatitis. So if you do something to change those, then that may alter the level. That's why if you do nothing whatsoever, then you really should repeat the test to be sure, but to know what's happening with that.
We're going every 3 months. So 3 months later, it went down 41.
That's good. But I think in a case like that, watching it, knowing that this is a slow-growing process, you don't necessarily do yourself any harm. Okay? If it persists being persistent with this elevation and it going up, then I think that you've got to decide then what you're going to do about it. Yes, sir. What kind? If I understand your question, there are certain cancers that has certain symptoms which are manifested so that you can suspect that this is a particular kind of a cancer. For example, if you had, say, bladder cancer or even kidney cancer, either one can present with blood in the urine. Okay? Or if you have a bladder infection, that too can present with blood in the urine. So when you have a symptom like that, you got to do further investigation. You got to look at either one of those specific organs to decide which one is in fact the cause of the cancer. Okay?
So in some cases, people who have their prostate gland removed, erectile dysfunction medications can sometimes be helpful.
Can?
Right.
That's why.
I guess people need to know that. can be helpful.
But that's why
it's not. It's not a guarantee.
That's why I said that in the process of making a decision, if surgery is a decision, we really need to walk through the entire process, and that includes what can I do when this happens. So if you have the conversation about the options of management or treatment, like medications or the use of prosthetics, you know, penile prosthetics, you know, too, those are options, too, that can be employed. But the point is, you should have the conversation ahead of time so you can start thinking about which one of these options you want to, say, engage in afterwards. And sometimes it's a stepwise process. You try this one, then you try that one medication-wise or going to the prostheses. Either way, it can... The situation is not totally hopeless. So there are things that you really need to talk about. Another question? Yes, sir.
Is prostate cancer, that a hereditary condition?
It can be. Correct. We think so, especially when in families the disease presents itself early on, so like in the 40s, because usually it's a disease, a cancer of older men. Mm-hmm. And if there are multiple men in the family who've had prostate cancer, and in some cases if the family has multiple other cancers, like colon, breast, pancreas, in a lung without, you know, smoking, that means that there is likely a cancer gene in the family. And for the specific individual, it is not known which one of these you're going to get. Like in women, they might get the breast cancer. And the man might get the prostate cancer or pancreas or whatever. So knowing the whole family history is very important, especially with the cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, I'm asking, my dad had prostate cancer, treated with radiation seeds. He passed away from something else, but one of my brothers had enlarged prostate.
He has a hypertrophic gland. Mm-hmm. And there are symptoms, which we can talk about briefly, that suggest you have the enlarged gland. But you have a question first?
Yeah. At what age should you start having self-test?
Have what?
At what age should you have yourself self-test?
The PSA?
Yeah.
Well, that's a discussion you have with your doctor because of the implications of it. And when you read the literature, even the lay literature, it will tell you, if you're going to consider having the test done, you should have a discussion with your doctor should you, in fact, have it done. Okay? By the same token, you're never too young, though, to have the digital rectal examination of the prostate gland. Because if that examination is positive, meaning that the gland is enlarged or something hard is found in there, then that may be a reason, even at a young age, to do the PSA. It's before you do the biopsy. Okay? Because once you manipulate the gland, then things are going to go up. Okay? So other than surgical intervention, other causes of erectile dysfunction are heart problems. And that has to do with the blood vessels, cardiovascular disease. And those who have atherosclerosis, which is, you know, plaques in the arteries, which then causes the blood vessels to become smaller in size, and the blood vessels that supply the prostate gland or the pelvic organs, they are much smaller, so they can't tolerate much of a decrease in their size without some side effects. So it is possible that in some men, one of the first signs of heart disease may be erectile dysfunction. May very well be. The same thing with diabetes. Maybe one of the first signs of diabetes could be erectile dysfunction. And diabetes is a very common problem throughout the population. And about 50%, sometimes up to 50% of men who have diabetes present with erectile dysfunction. So if you're having a problem, you can focus on the problem, but you got to understand what else may be going on. And, you know, diabetes affects every vessel in the body. We call diabetes small vessel disease because that abnormal blood sugar has some very, very negative effects on the small vessels. So, you know, so with diabetes, in addition to the erectile dysfunction, it could present, you know, with blindness because of how it affects the eyes. It affects, you know, the feet with ulcers and things of that nature, poor circulation. Again, it is the effect of the high blood sugar on the blood vessels that leads to the problem, the manifestation of the problem. If you're having erectile dysfunction, you got to look at some drugs that you might be taking. And one class of drugs that a lot of people are on, especially men, is what? High blood pressure. High blood pressure. In fact, some men, when they go on these medications, and then the problem of erectile dysfunction becomes evident, what do? Stop, which is the wrong thing to do. Yeah, so getting back to the point, there are things, there are disease processes that have multiple or many manifestations. Thing is, you need to pay attention to all of them. If these things develop, then you've got to have a good physical examination. And, you know, when you go to the doctor, don't be, what's the word I want to use? Ray, help me out. Passive.
I was going to say that. You have to advocate for
yourself. Yeah, don't be passive. I mean, if you've married and talk to your wife, when they go to the doctor, they want the doctor, the nurse, to answer every question that they have. And they don't leave until they get answers. And if they leave without answers, they go home and think about it, they call back and get an answer. Do you do that?
Yeah,
I do that. Do you do that?
I work at Walgreens.
Go ahead. As a pharmacist. Speak up.
I work at Walgreens as a pharmacist. I may get one or two questions from a guy a day. I probably get 50 from a woman.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just, we do need to ask more questions. It's very seldom I have a guy ask more questions.
And if you don't ask him if you have any questions, he won't ask you any questions, right? Yes.
Okay. I see a lot of things out there. What about diet? Because the diet sometimes can last, it can cause some of those things or something that can.
Well, your diet has an impact on everything on this list. So what you take into your body impacts you significantly. And a lot of these things can be, you know, positively impacted by managing your diet. So do you go to the grocery store and buy groceries? You do? Do you pay attention to the labels on the foods? You do? How many of you do that? Good. Great. We'll come back. Yeah.
I guess as it relates to looking at labels, I mean, yeah, I look at labels. What should we be looking at?
Okay. The amount of fat, okay, the total number of calories of each thing is in this that makes up that product, the amount of sodium, in there. You look at all the protein content, the sugar content, all those things you should be paying attention to, everything. And then if you have a health problem, you know, like high blood pressure, obviously you don't want to be, you know, eating or drinking something that has a high sodium content. You just don't. And if you have renal failure, as an example, you don't want to be eating something that has a high protein content. The connection here is that things that are high protein on content, because of how the protein is broken down, that leads to elevation of the blood urea nitrogen. And you can only get rid of that by having dialysis or if you have a transplant in, you know, in place, if you haven't been transplanted already. So everything you eat with respect to the problem that you have makes a difference in terms of the overall outcome of that disease, especially with, you know, diabetes and high cholesterol. Yeah, as I said, you can help manage these problems. What we talk about in our health class is trying to, if you don't manage it, if you don't have it, try not to get it. And you can try not to get it by what you eat. Okay? But if you're diagnosed with any one of these, then there's certain precautions that you have to take. Okay? To the next one here. So, obesity. This is what obesity is. And this is how it's determined. The body mass index, which is your overall size, is equal to your weight divided by your height squared. And the height could be in, the weight can be in kilograms if you use the metric system, or pounds. And the height is in centimeters if you're in the metric system, or feet in it, inches and feet in the regular system. So this gives you an idea. With respect to your weight, you know, in pounds, it tells you what your body mass index will be and what you consider the underweight, you know, healthy, over, or obese. All right? Now, and we use this a lot. This is now commonly used in terms of just determining your height and your weight anymore. Most physicians' offices really try to understand what is your body mass index. And then they can talk to you about measures that you can take, you know, to manage your diet or to lose weight. Now, obesity is a very common problem these days. It's much more of a problem than what it should be years ago. And to the point that it is impacting our kids. I mean, you go to the malls, you go to the schools, what do you see? Yeah, and it's all primarily, well, there are two reasons. One, what they're eating. And how much of what they're eating. And what's the other one?
Exercise.
Lack of exercise.
You drive them all over the place.
Yeah. And in the school systems, they used to have recess or FIED. That's not mandatory anymore. So the kids don't get a chance to go out. Unless they're in some type of sports program, there is no exercise. And then when they ride the bus to school, they ride the bus home, or you take them to school, you bring them home, they don't walk to school anymore. So, but even at that, though, there are playgrounds. Okay? And, you know, per the session this morning, you as a man, in the context of this, you need to take control. You need to be in charge. You need to do what? Take your kids where? Exactly. That's your responsibility. Do you do it? All right. Because if they ate... So, as we just said, why is it that we get fat? Because we overeat. As we said here, it's cheap. Well, maybe not anymore. Fast foods. It is plentiful. You know, I don't want to, you know, knock any particular restaurant, but there's some restaurants that you go to, one not too far away, you go there and eat all you want. And some of the food is nutritious. But, you know, you don't have to eat it all because it's there. Okay? You just don't. Especially on Sundays. You just don't have to eat it all. And large portions. And there's a restaurant that we went to in D.C. It's called Small Plate Dining. Have you ever seen any of those, been in those places? They're really small. And you haven't really put forth an effort to really eat a lot. So you don't have to eat a lot, but eat right. Okay? So these are the things that you need to pay attention to. How many of us, after a meal, what do we do? And you know, the environment is not helping us at all, because I mean, I have never seen so many large screen TVs advertised. And what do? You want to watch the game, right? You want to see it nice and big. You can't be there. Just sit back and relax and eat and drink and what else? So you have to be very active in the process of not becoming obese. You have to be. There is no other way, you know, taking all these things into consideration. Now, I put genes on there because in some cases, if that is a genetic predisposition, then you have to be more proactive in terms of not letting this happen to you. All right? Because there are some bad things that can happen to you as a result of obesity. I mean, the bigger you are, the more work your heart has to do to get the body, to get the blood out into the circulation, so that your organs will live. And when the heart is working over time, one because of a large body weight or because of some injury or whatever, and including those who have hypertension, when it's working over time to overcome that force, this can lead to heart failure. And that is a progressive process. And focusing not on obesity, but hypertension, if you are on antihypertensive medications and you don't maintain good control, keeping that systolic blood pressure down, that heart muscle has got the heart is a muscle, okay? It's going to get tired. It takes a while for it to get tired, but it's going to get tired. And then the blood is not going to be pumped out, you know, to the rest part of the body. But the fact is, when the heart fails, now they have some devices that they can put, you know, into the body to help the heart beat a little better, to the maintain circulation. But ultimately, these people are going to end up with a heart transplant. So, if you're on focusing on hypertension, if you are on those medications, you're going to have side effects. You need to know what they are. And you need to talk to your doctor, because there are various antihypertensive medications. You know? Yeah, I'm looking at you. I'm just looking at you.
What'd you say?
Oh. He's a pharmacist, by the way. So there are various antihypertensive medications, and they have side effects. And not all of them have the side effect of erectile dysfunction. At least not as bad, but there are other side effects too. But you need to have that conversation with the doctor all the time, such that you can be tried on different medications. You don't want to stop taking it just because it makes you feel because it makes you feel bad, which it does, but there may be one that doesn't make you feel as bad, and therefore you should be prescribed something something differently and not end up with this problem of heart failure. Heart attack, obesity in combination with hypertension, and they really do go together, as well as atherosclerosis, which is hardening of the arteries. When the arteries are hard, when they're stimulated by the hormones that affect the wall of them, they don't, you know, contract. They're like a stiff pipe. They just get smaller in size because of the plaque that's built up into the wall of the vessel. And therefore, you don't get blood supply to their to the organs. The other thing about obesity, most of the time, as you look at a person, you know, you can see what's external, the amount of fat that they have externally. But the other thing is, there's a lot of fat on the inside, too, that you just don't see. I mean, we see it when we take patients to the operating room, we have to operate on them. It's just there. Even the abdominal surgeons and even the cardiac surgeons, when they operate, they can see all the fat around the heart. The fat has got to, it's just deposits there, and it causes, you know, problems. So some of these things can be avoided, or the effect can be lessened, again, if we manage our diet.
Well, once the plaque is there, is there any kind of stuff that you can take or whatever to reduce the plaque? I mean, make it free up, or what do you do then? Is there already?
Some of the plaques are formed because of high cholesterol, so if you have the high cholesterol, cholesterol-lowering drugs, which will decrease cholesterol formation and therefore decrease the deposition in the vessels. The only other way, when it's really bad and nothing is getting there, now they can do stents, place stents, especially in the heart, in the heart, coronary artery stents, you know, can be placed. Or as the surgeons, the cardiac surgeons, they do the vascular, the bypass, taking the veins from in the chest or in the thigh, and then rerouting the blood supply to the heart. But those are the options. But nowadays, stents are done primarily, but they don't last forever.
Does exercise also help remove plaque?
It doesn't help remove it. It just, once that process starts, it's really hard to change it. That's why you have to employ good health nutrition measures to help decrease the amount of deposition. And in some cases, they put you on these lipid-lowering and cholesterol-lowering drugs. To health. Yes?
With stents, should one have them checked every so often or replaced? Or?
Well, they have to be checked because they don't stay open permanently. Okay? Mm-hmm. And the other thing about those stents, regardless of the kind that they are, by their nature, the things that make up the blood system, like the platelets, mm-hmm. they are going to attach to those stents, and over time, the more buildup, what's going to happen? More collecting, you got to do some, you know, retooling, you know, revascularizing, or once again, you know, placing more stents or opening up in some way. There's a hand.
Are there tests to determine how much plaque remains?
Well, you know, the. There is this X-ray test, this type of a CAT scan that's being done to look at plaque placement in the coronary arteries. That is being done. Now, not all doctors will do that, but I think that based upon the symptoms that you may have, the doctor will decide, you know, whether or not that test ought to be done. Otherwise, if you don't do that X-ray test, you're going to have an angiogram, which is, you know, sticking the the growing blood vessels and then shooting dye to the system and looking at the flow of blood, especially to the heart. Okay. One more thing about the obesity and we don't know the firm relationship, but it looks like in certain populations there's a high propensity rate of a cancer in obese individuals. But clearly, you know, obese individuals, this problem of sleep apnea. And again, this relates to deposition of fat in the tissues in the throat, which clogs up the upper part of the windpipe. And it just kind of flops over and it closes up. When it closes up, you have the built up of what we call CO2, and that is what causes you to fall asleep almost instantly the moment you sit down. That is those who are more obese. That is a common problem in those individuals. Okay. So this is just a reminder, 1 Corinthians 6:19 and 20. Know ye that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you, which ye have of God, and it is not your own. So if you're a believer, a true believer, this means something to you. Okay? And for you are bought with the price, therefore glorify God in your body and your spirit, which is God's. So there's, you know, words to live by. We've kind of already touched upon this in terms of what a heart attack, the causes of the heart attack. What are some of the classic symptoms of a heart attack? And y'all need to know this, not just for your benefit.
I have a chest, or things like that.
Pain in your left arm, weakness, shortness of breath, rapid heart rate, like you're going to faint.
You say
left
arm?
Left. Why is that? Heart's on the left side, the blood flow to that, usually go down there.
Dr. Walker, isn't the symptoms a little different from women that we as men need to be aware of too, because our wives or women in our lives may be experiencing that?
Yeah. In fact, February is heart month for women, go red for women, because cardiac symptoms, as Rick just said, are quite different. They are much more subtle, what we call very atypical in women than in men. And women can go a long time with these vague chest symptoms, mild difficulty breathing, tiredness that's progressive, which they just, you know, blow off because they're busy doing other things, you know, like taking care of you.
Yeah.
So you're right. The point is that the information that you have is not just for you, but for those around you, your loved ones. So if your wife does complain a lot of chest pain or indigestion, which doesn't go away with whatever she does, then you got to go and see the doctor and get your heart checked out.
Yeah, just on the heart issue, I had triple bypass heart surgery about 3 years ago, and I didn't have any real symptoms of the disease, except for some mild shortness of breath. I was at my normal weight, ate right, exercised, I did all the things. I went to the doctor, had a regular physical done. I was getting off the table, and he said, "You're fine, you're good to go for another year." And I said, "Well, I haven't had a stress test done in about 6 or 7 years. I think I may need one."
Yeah,
and I went, and he said, "Okay, let me schedule for a stress test." Went in for the stress test, failed the stress test. Then I found out that I had three of my major arteries over 80% blocked. I could have had a heart attack at any point in time. So if you haven't had a stress test done, that's really one of the true ways of finding out whether or not you have a blockage in your heart.
And that is what should be done. But the other takeaway from this is that he was proactive.
Yes.
If you hadn't been proactive, you'd probably be dead right now.
Right.
Exactly.
Doctor, just got to emphasize the point where what we learned is that you've got to be an advocate for yourself when you see a doctor.
Yeah.
You need to ask questions, you need to do your homework, and you need to go in and do things.
Okay. The other thing is that when you go to the doctor and you have an examination, We talked about this earlier. You need to know the results. It is not true that no news is good news. Okay? It is not necessarily true. You should be proactive to get the results, get copies of results, you know, have your own copies of your records these days. And there's an application for that, right?
Yes.
And a lot of the health system that you all probably belong to, you have access to my chart or whatever. You should know the results. And if you go online and check your results, you should call the doctor back and get an explanation for some of the results. Okay? Don't just, you're not the doctor. Just like that commercial where you have this doctor doing this jackhammer and you got the construction man there looking at the doctor doing all of this. I mean, he or she knows his job, therefore you should call them out and have them explain to you those test results so that you are more accurate in terms of what they mean, like the PSA. What does it mean? If you had it before, was it elevated? How elevated was it? Another one that sneaks up on you is diabetes. You get your blood glucose checked all the time. It can creep up slowly. Okay? So you just need to be proactive. And speaking of diabetes, it is usually manifested because it's slow in terms of its onset, what we call polyuria, polydipsia, and polyphagia. You're urinating a lot, you're drinking a lot, and you're eating a lot. Early signs of elevated blood sugar and probably diabetes. Again, some of the, all these, the human body is really amazing. And God made it the way He wanted it made. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you should know your body and know and sense when something is wrong or different. Mm-hmm. Because you have to take the next step. And don't just sit back and wait, for the doctor to tell you that you should have a test. You should know about some of the things. If heart disease runs in your family, you should know as much about heart disease and the treatment as you possibly can. Cancer in your family, you should know what kind of a cancer, who had it, at what age, all those kinds of things. That helps you and the members of your family. Okay? I think we're out of time. I want you to get to the session on time. So any quick questions I can answer briefly, if so I will. Yes, sir?
I thought we were about men having breast cancer.
Yes?
So can men have mammogram?
Men can have mammogram. So if there are multiple women in your family who have had breast cancer, that puts you as a man at risk. So what should happen is someone in the family ought to have the blood test for the breast cancer gene. Then the family knows that the gene is there. And those who want to know, they can be proactive in terms of management.
So men should examine themselves?
Yeah. Examine the breast, as well as examine the testicles, too, for the testicular mass. Yes. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you.